Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm Trevor Sikkema. With me, next to me, not physically, but in spirit, is Benjamin Solak. Riding with me on this podcast. Ben, we're at the third pick for the Oakland Raiders in this guest mock draft. We're already at 27. Does it feel like yesterday, or does it feel like it's been years? Which one does it actually feel like?
I could not tell you any of the picks in the top 10. It feels like a month ago.
Well, I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I'm about to tell everybody all the picks from the top 10 and all the picks that have happened so far in this 2019 guest mock draft. It's been a lot of fun. We've had a different person for every single team picking for this mock draft. Me and Ben haven't even picked any of them, which has been great. It's been good to get a lot of different perspective, but I'll recap it for you really quick. Cardinals went Kyler Murray at 1. 49ers went Nick Bosa. Jets got Josh Allen. Raiders went Quinnen Williams. Bucks went Ed Oliver to the dismay of many other NFL teams. Giants went Dwayne Haskins. Jaguars, Jonah Williams. Lions went Montez Sweat. Bills, TJ Hawkinson. Broncos, Devin White. Bengals, Devin Bush. Packers, Brian Burns. Dolphins, Christian Wilkins. Falcons, Juwan Taylor. Redskins went Byron Murphy. Panthers went Cleveland Farrell. Giants went DK Metcalf. Vikings went Jeffrey Simmons. Titans, Eric McCoy. Steelers, Greedy Williams. Then in the top 20, or in the 20s, we had the Seahawks taking Jerry Tillery. Ravens got Paris Campbell. Texans got Andre Dillard. Raiders, DeAndre Baker with their second first round pick. Eagles went Rashawn Gary. Colts went Chauncey Garner Johnson. And that brings us to the third Raiders pick of the first round. And since, you know, we promised that we'd get all kinds of variety on this show, so we have our third Raiders person to make the pick for the third pick for the Raiders, and that is Nick Jeltnis. By his bio on Twitter, he is a disgruntled Raiders fan. He's been covering the Raiders fan for a couple of years, though. Nick's one of my favorite follows on Twitter. Nick, thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to be here with you fellas to end what is certainly going to be an eventful first round for the Raiders. Having three picks, no matter what they do, it's going to get interesting and probably pretty crazy.
We were laughing earlier because Trev, you know, teased in the Raiders pick as like with their final pick in the first round, which is a weird thing to say.
Right.
It's not what you typically get.
Yeah.
It really is. No, so I've asked this basically of every Raiders person, but I want to get your perspective as well, because everybody's perspective has been a little bit different. What was the season like for you? I mean, it was probably, you know, John Gruden comes in at the end of last offseason. The hype's got to be kind of crazy for that, right? I mean, you got John Gruden, he's back, he picked Oakland. Then all of a sudden, you know, the Khalil Mack trade happened, and Raiders fans have got to be thinking, yo, what did we just sign up for? Yeah, obviously, he had the season that was kind of disappointing, got him the record that earned them the fourth overall draft pick. But where were you on this kind of crazy journey that the Raiders have been on really since signing John Gruden? What was it like for you when they made that move with the Khalil Mack trade, and then kind of what happened during the season?
So when the John Gruden might come back to the NFL rumors started circulating for the 10th year in a row, I was pretty pessimistic that he was even going to come back. I thought it was the same old story, get a raise at ESPN, go back to his happy life, and then all of a sudden things got pretty real. And he got a crazy contract for a coach, and I was on the fence about it. I mean, him being away from the game for so long, there's plenty of reason why you think that it might not go well, but at the same time, half glass full, plenty of reason to think why it might go great. If he really truly was dedicated to coming back to coaching, he had basically 10 years of film, interviews with coaches, all this time to build a playbook, think about things you would do differently. So, you know, not too hard to talk yourself into it. And as soon as his introductory press conference came back and had some former Raiders greats there, and we had the Chucky scowl come back, which Trevor is a Bucks fan or Bucks person who covers the Bucks. I'm sure you know all too well.
The nostalgia really started
kicking in, and I was like, all right, I'm on board. He said all the right things.
Yeah.
And I was fired up about it, you know, so hard not to, especially at my age group growing up with it. It was kind of like my childhood coming back in a sense. So I definitely talked myself into it. And then, it went kind of downhill pretty quickly. Fast forward, you know, there's no way to sugarcoat it. I was pretty devastated about the trade. It just seemed kind of silly. The whole, we can't pay two $20 million players when the salary cap keeps going up and up. And don't know, it just seemed unnecessary. And then to top it off, they decided to throw in a second round pick while they were getting rid of him. So, you know, wasn't pleased about it. You know, fast forward to, I guess, right now, where the Raiders have signed a few players, Trent Brown, Antonio Brown, Tyrell Williams. You see some of the, I don't know, the fruits of the labor, some of the things they've been able to do. Still not saying I would do the same thing all over again, but it's definitely been a roller coaster with the timeline here, and it's going to be probably even more of a roller coaster with 3 first-round picks, because they can move up, they can move down, and they can do a million different things.
So now I get to ask a question that no other team analyst will even come close to being asked, which is, looking at your first 2 first-round picks, and taking a look at this depth chart, I want to know specifically for Quinn and Williams, obviously one of the top two, if not the top player in this draft, period. Defensive tackle is one of the stronger spots on the roster for the Raiders in terms of Maurice Hurst, Jonathan Hankins, and PJ Hall. And so I'm curious if, number one, you like the fact that there was that selection at 4, but number two, looking at it kind of through Paul Gunther's lenses, how do you think he splits up the snaps here? How do you think he gets impact play out of Hurst, PJ Hall, and Quinn Williams? That's a ton of draft capital and a ton of promising youth into this position. Who gets the starting reps? Who comes in on late downs? How's that going to suss itself out?
Yeah, it's a good point, because if you were to look at the roster, the Raiders roster, it's not a great one, and the strongest positional group probably is either defensive tackle or, you know, if you want to talk about the offensive line starters. So it's not a position of need, certainly not a 4 overall, but in my opinion, Quinnen Williams is the best player in the draft for my money, and I think my buddy Ted Wynn did the right thing in terms of taking him. He's just, I think, got the chance to be I don't know if I want to say the Aaron Donald quite type of player, but, you know, close to that level, Geno Atkins type player.
Yeah.
I just think the level of impact that he can get, and just how important an interior rusher is getting after the quarterback. I'm no offensive line coach, but several guys that I interact with on Twitter that are or have been say that interior pressure is harder to deal with than edge pressure. And if you get that with Quinnen Williams, regardless if you have Mo Hurst and PJ Hall in the mix, you know, those guys, while good, promising young players, aren't good enough to pass on Quinnen, basically, is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And as far as they split up the snaps, it's going to be interesting to see how Gunther does that. Quinnen, I think, is a guy that could definitely be an every down player. And then with the other three, just rotate them in as you need. And then just give Quinnen a breather whenever he needs it, basically. So that is how I think I would go about it, and hopefully how they go about it.
You mentioned earlier talking about some of the additions that the Raiders have had when you were talking about fast-forwarding to this offseason. I mean, signing Trenton Brown, getting a guy like LaMarcus Joyner, Tyrell Williams, even Vontaze Burfict, J.J. Nelson as well as another wide receiver. Which one of those guys, which one of the new additions, I think, are you most excited about seeing on this team, and which one do you think, I guess, can make the biggest impact?
Well, if Antonio Brown counts in that because of the trade, then it's got to be AB. He's been probably the last, 5 or 6 years, the best receiver in football in terms of just overall production, sheer numbers. Just what he can do on the field is incredibly special. And you know, it's crazy to think about projecting his stats and his age. He's going to be probably our best bet if he can stay healthy to get anywhere close to what Jerry Rice's numbers were. If he can have another 6-7 strong years, he's that good of a receiver. I'm not saying he's like greatest of all time, but where his numbers might end up, I've looked at it, and he could be up there. So I'm most excited about him, of course, and assuming Derek Carr sticks around, which isn't a sure thing, I don't think, he's going to be far and away the best weapon that he's ever had, and it basically means no excuses for Derek Carr. It makes it much more of a make or break year with having AB on the squad. So I'm most excited to see what he can do.
I'm glad you brought up Carr in a make or break year, because one thing that it's really interesting to ask a lot of Raiders fans and analysts is, what's the leash like on Derek Carr? Obviously, you add Antonio Brown. Now it's year 2 in the Gruden system, and I think you did clearly see some growth in Gruden system in year 1 for Derek Carr. I think you saw that they developed out some concepts that he was finding success with. So I think there was some growth there in year 1. How long is the leash in year 2? And are we really looking at a situation where if he plays poorly, they're going to look very hard at moving on from him in 2020?
So I think I'm in the minority of Raider Nation here on what they think will happen with Derek Carr. I love everything about Derek. I think he seems like he's a great dude, a hard worker. I do believe that he can get back to some of that 2016 form when he was in the MVP conversation. But I think the fact of the matter is, looking at this objectively, if you were to give a general scenario of, you have this quarterback that's highly paid, he's been inconsistent, he's had two major injuries, you have a new head coach that didn't draft this quarterback, you have a new general manager that didn't draft this quarterback, right. I feel like 90% of the time that quarterback gets replaced. So that's why I think it is on the table. If for whatever reason Mayock and Gruden love whatever quarterback that's 24, 27, trade up, I do think it's on the table. So I think the leash is short. But as you said, there was some pretty significant growth, particularly in the second half of the year for Carr. I think there was a point where he had eight straight games without an interception. He did a lot of things well down the stretch. And if the protection can be better with Tyrell and AB in the mix, there's no reason to think that he can't improve in year two in Gruden's system.
All right, Nick, throw the GM hat on. The Cardinals pass on Kyler at one. If he's there at four, do you make the pick?
I do. If he was there, Kyler Murray was on the clock, on the board at number four, I would take him. I think he can be a special player. I'm very, very high on Kyler this year. His ball placement, I think, is impeccable. He can make all the throws. He's a dynamic athlete. And just based on some of the things that John Gruden has said about what he wants in quarterback, he mentioned something about a month ago. He hopes Derek can get out and extend more plays, which is something that he's never really done in his career. And then just think about the receivers that have come on board, Tyrell Williams, Antonio Brown, J.J. Nelson, all those guys are downfield receiving threats. And Derek Carr is probably somewhere in the 20s to 25 and over the last 4 or 5 years in terms of like average yards per attempt. So he's not a guy that just pushes the ball downfield. So it just doesn't seem like he's the ideal fit that Gruden wants. Well, I think Kyler absolutely is.
So here's another question, I think, building off of what you just said there. Let's say Kyler does go number one overall. Let's say, you know, just say that Quinnen goes number four to the Raiders. If every other quarterback is still on the board and the Raiders come on at 24, are you taking one? Or are you leaning more towards taking a player because you're not a big fan of the rest of this quarterback class? Like, how big is it? What is, from your answer there, I guess what I'm basically saying is, like, mm-hmm. How good is Kyler above like what Derek Carr is compared to the rest of his quarterback class?
For me personally, I think it's a pretty significant gap. Kyler is the only quarterback I would want the Raiders to draft in the first round. I like Haskins. I think he's a quality quarterback, pretty good all around. I think he could be an above average starter for a while, but I think if you're replacing Derek Carr, you need to go for someone that is going to be, there's never, no such thing as surefire, but your best bet is having a franchise shooting quarterback. And I don't think any of the quarterbacks other than Kyler fit that description. Whether or not Gruden and Mayock are in that same camp, I could certainly see Mayock being a fan of Haskins. I could see Gruden being a fan of someone like Drew Lock. So it would not surprise me at 24 or 27 if they do go quarterback, if there happens to be one available, but I wouldn't do that if it were up to me.
Let me ask you this final hypothetical question. Realistically, what's the worst combination of 4, 24, and 27 you can think of in terms of what the Raiders actually might do? Three first-round picks, what would leave a bad taste in your mouth?
That's a nightmare scenario to go down, because as we saw with John Gruden last year, I mean, anything is on the table with the Colton Miller pick. I was not pleased about that. Brandon Parker, PJ Hall, those guys were definite reaches as well. So when you talk about a potential nightmare scenario, it really could be anything. I mean, hopefully Mayock can bring a more of a calming, rational presence to the draft, but it is Gruden's show at the end of the day. So to answer the question, I would say something like LJ Collier in the first round, somewhere around 24, 27. Rashawn Gary at 4, I think, would be a nightmare. So I would say that. So Gary at 4. I'm not a very big Lonnie Johnson fan. I know some people have him in the first round. He's kind of got a size, athletic profile that I think could be appealing. So I wouldn't like that at 24 or 27, but cornerback is a big need. So if they didn't go DeAndre Baker like the Raiders did in this scenario in 24, I could see something like that. So that would be bad news. And then 27, I'm not sure. Maybe someone like N'Keal Harry, I'm not too high on. I think he doesn't separate well, and I think that's just about a deal breaker. So I would probably say Gary, maybe Collier, Harry, something like that. Yeah, I think combination of those players would not be fun.
All right, well, let's talk about a positive. Let's get you on the clock here at 27. Who would you pick out of these pool of players that are left that you think would help the Raiders the most? Who are you going with at number 27?
So with Quinning at 4, DeAndre Baker at 24, we got one more first-round pick to use. I just don't think there's any way possible that John Gruden is going to let the first round go by without getting his offense a new toy. Best available player that fits that description here is Noah Fant, tight end out of Iowa.
Love it.
So that is the pick. Jared Cook is gone, leaving a pretty big hole at that spot. He was pretty productive the last 2 years, last year especially. He was a fail-safe for Derek Carr, and not only a fail-safe, but he was a legit downfield threat and a red zone target. And Fant could be every bit as good, well, certainly probably much better than that. George Kittle had a phenomenal year last year, and Fant's someone that's got, the athletic profile and the tools, the diverse strategy to have a pretty big impact year one. I don't think that there's going to be too much of a learning curve for him. So I would run to the clock, no brainer with who was on the board to go get Fant.
What do you think, Ben?
I think the Patriots are devastated. I love it. Feed it to me.
That's what we want to hear.
Oh man, no, I love Nick. Thank you so much. It's very difficult making the third of three first round picks for a team anytime you've got to do it, just because so much goes out in front of you, but you did a wonderful job there, my friend. You answered some tough hypothetical questions, so it was good to have you on, man. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right, thanks for having me on, fellas.
Ben, we got I literally almost said San Diego Chargers. I'm never gonna get this out of my mind that it's the San Diego Chargers, but it's the Los Angeles Chargers now. They're on the clock next. I'm excited because the Chargers, which way could they go? There's some good interior guys left. Did they replace somebody that they lost in free agency? I'm not sure. Stick around. We'll find out. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. We are now at pick number 28 of the 2019 guest mock draft series. Ben, we're getting to the final days here. We're getting in these final picks.
Bottom five, dude. Last five in the first round.
Bottom
five. This is where you start trading up into the first round. Get that 5th-year option, baby.
That was some quick math there. All right, so at number 28 I'm not going to say San Diego Chargers. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to say the Los Angeles Chargers, because that's what they are now. Okay, so we have the Chargers here at number 28. They've got a lot of different directions they can go. This was a team, Ben, I don't know if you knew this. This was my Super Bowl team last year.
I remember you were super high on them, aggressively high.
I picked the Chargers to play the Falcons in the Super Bowl at the beginning of the year.
How'd that go?
It went fine from the Chargers' perspective, because they almost got there. Did not really go very well from Atlanta. But we're not talking about Atlanta. We're talking about the Chargers. And here to help us talk about those Chargers, we have Michael Peterson, who works for Bolts from the Blue. Michael, thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, guys. Glad to be here.
All right, so talk to me about this Chargers year. Talk to me about how correct I was in picking them to go to the Super Bowl, and how it was just an act of God that screwed them from getting there and achieving their destiny. No, but seriously, talk about the Chargers year. Obviously, they had a really great year, performed really well. Phillip Rivers was kind of doing his thing the whole time. What's the situation and how they're building off of that year? Was it a one-off thing, or is this kind of the beginning of a sustained window of success, or a window to really compete for that Super Bowl berth and potentially a Super Bowl title?
Well, I mean, it was a hell of a year, guys, and one of the biggest things to look at is obviously the revitalization of Phillip Rivers. You know, he's been pretty up and down over the last couple of years. This is a guy who, you know, goes from leading the league in interceptions to having one of the cleanest years of his career. And it's just up and down, up and down. But he's pointed to the youth on this team, the youth and these great young players that Tom Telesco and Anthony Lynn have been able to find. And he points at them and says, you know, these guys are you know, making me energized again, making me feel like I'm young again. And that play really showed this past year in 2018. I mean, he had one of the best years in terms of, you know, touchdowns to interception ratio, kind of slid there at the end, but finished with one of his top passer ratings for his career. I believe a top three in his storied career. And Telesco just done such a wonderful job getting bright young players. And obviously Mike Williams, the seventh overall pick from 2017, finally just absolutely broke out. I mean, he was super efficient with his catches. I think caught a touchdown, you know, every four or five catches. And guys like young players, Derwin James, obviously, Desmond King. I mean, they're finding guys that are falling to them. Obviously, Derwin was a huge surprise. Desmond King, a former Jim Thorpe Award winner, you know, falls to the fifth round, and he's just this tweener player that people were scared of. And Telesco saw something, and next thing you know, year two, he's a first-team All-Pro. Derwin James is an All-Pro as a first-year player. I mean, it's just absolutely insane. And this is the kind of momentum that these guys need to carry, especially with Philip Rivers heading to the, you know, twilight of his career. He's got a couple years left. He said at least a year or two more he wants to continue to play. And, you know, this momentum has to continue if they really are talking about getting a Super Bowl while Rivers is still playing.
I'm glad you brought up how successful Telesco has been early, because I was able to go to Telesco's podium at the Combine. He really impressed me. I really liked the way he talked about approaching the draft. I want to ask about what specifically has to be done for a team that wants to deploy its defense the way San Diego, or, oh, dang it, Trevor. Dang it, Trevor.
You said it.
If you didn't say it first, I'll do it like Los Angeles does, as I've always said, like Los Angeles does. Because famously, as we know, in the first round of the playoffs, the Los Angeles Chargers' seven defensive back base was great against the Baltimore Ravens and really locked them down. And then the Patriots came to town. The Patriots, fantastic at exploiting your weakness, really exposed some of the warts there. So when you look at this team, I mean, Thomas Davis gets added. You have Jatavis Brown and Denzel Perryman. You have good linebackers. Obviously, you've got like four safeties on the roster who saw significant time. You know, Kaiser White, who knows really exactly what he is, if you want to call him a safety. When you look at the way this defense is going to be deployed, what do they need? Do they need to add a true thumper in the middle, or is that Thomas Davis? Do they need to add, you know, bigger, heavier-hitting safeties, or are you good in that? What needs to be done on this back seven to prevent something like the Patriots game from happening ever again?
So I think one of the biggest things, and it's not in the back seven, one of the biggest things is finding a guy to come in and be a force at that nose tackle position. I mean, they signed Brandon Mebane back to a two-year deal, and a lot of people thought that was the wrong pick. That was the wrong signing. Everyone was pretty upset they let Darius Philon go and sign a very similar deal with the Arizona Cardinals. Kind of had a lot of people up in arms. But first, there's got to be someone who can help stop that run. I think, I mean, as you said before, the team did such an amazing job stopping the run against the Baltimore Ravens, especially, you know, being able to revenge a loss from earlier in the regular season. And, I mean, especially in that game, they look like they couldn't stop anything. In the playoff game, you know, they bring out this super cool new defense with seven defensive backs, and they're able to stop the run, man. They learned something, and they exploited it, but then the Patriots come to town and kind of have their way. So, for me, it's a presence on the inside. Philon's gone. Corey Lugett might leave and not get re-signed. So, there's definitely room there in that, you know, interior defensive line that they really need to find. But another thing is maybe possibly finding, and they have Denzel Perryman, Jatavis Brown. Kaiser was the starting will linebacker before he got hurt early in the season. But with Thomas Davis coming in, he's already penciled in. So that linebacker core is a little more shored up than people think. But on the back end, there's got to be free safety help for Derwin James. This past year, Jahlil Adai and Derwin James played essentially the same position. It's just Derwin James is Derwin James, and Adai is Adai. And that showed too often in this past season. 49ers game, you know, letting up a huge touchdown pass to George Kittle. The first Ravens game, letting up a huge pass to Mark Andrews. I mean, these guys that shouldn't be getting behind, you know, our furthest defenders. And that's obviously what happened with Adai. He's let go because that just can't happen. So a guy like, you know, Nasir Adderley or any of these top safeties, Chauncey Gardner, is another guy with some range. I mean, I'd say one of those two. You got to get that interior defender to get that instant pressure. But a guy on the back end who can complement Derwin James's game is also super important.
How likely is it that the Chargers invest I don't say their top pick necessarily this one in the first round, but just one of their top picks on offensive weapons. Is it likely that they're going to continue to add to that, or are they kind of set? I mean, they've got guys like Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Travis Benjamin, Hunter Henry, and then running back, obviously you got Melvin Gordon. You're hoping that he stays healthy and he can do his thing on a yearly basis. Are they really set there, or could you see them adding some talent in that area early on in the draft?
It's tough to see them adding someone, let's say day two, mostly because of the Travis Benjamin. I know it's just a one-year extension, and mostly this was kind of help clear up some cap space this season, or this free agency period still. Maybe they want to make one more splash before the season begins. But essentially with the way the contract came out, there's no way they're going to keep Benjamin next season. But I just think they kind of kicked the can on him so they wouldn't have to worry about receiver help, at least earlier on in the draft. They still got guys like Dylan Cantrell, Jeremy Davis, Artavis Scott. They really like some of these younger guys, these guys that they found, you know, on the as undrafted free agents. And Dylan Cantrell was a sixth-round pick last year who I couldn't believe fell to the sixth round, to be totally honest. He's got a heck of a relative athletic score. If you guys, you all know Math Bomb, you know, he had close to an elite or very, very, very elite athletic score. And he's got jump ball skills for days. This guy's big body, 6'3", 226 pounds. I mean, after the year Mike Williams had, a lot of people thought Dylan Cantrell was who we wanted Mike Williams to be. And so to be able to add that sort of weapon to the offense, to give that kind of presence to Phillip Rivers, is really exciting to me, and I know to a lot of fans and some of my fellow writers. Dylan Cantrell is that guy we're looking forward to maybe step up with the presence of, you know, Tyrell Williams heading over to the Oakland Raiders. So I think at least for this year, I'd be super, super surprised to see any sort of offensive weapon in day two. I mean, guys, Austin Eckler, Justin Jackson, even Detrez Newsome, who they found as an undrafted free agent again last year, played some meaningful snaps, especially when Gordon misses some time. So I think they're super happy with what they got in the running back field. Wide receivers, I think they're super set. And with Hunter Henry coming back, I can't imagine what this offense is going to look like with him as well. So I'm super excited. But, yeah, I do not believe anything at least day two, day one in the offensive, you know, weaponry field.
The moment you said Dylan Cantrell's name somewhere in New England, Brad Kelly's ears perked up, man. He felt it from afar on the radar. But, all right, we're selling the offensive weapons. I think offensive line could probably use some help. I'm sure it's something we'll get to. Phillip Rivers, the quarterback, like you said, fantastic addition. Or, fantastic, I should say, like comeback year. Then you have the audition of Tyrod Taylor as like the high-caliber backup player. But how important is it that maybe a young guy starts getting integrated? I know Phillip's now like mid-30s, late-30s, obviously, as Trevor knows, still having kids. But what's the priority like in terms of looking at the young quarterbacks that are in this class? How important do you think it is for the Chargers, or at least how important do they view it, to draft a mid-round young guy and see if maybe they can ease that transition from Phillip Rivers to the next player?
You know, that's been a big question, and that's kind of a question every year. People, every single time the draft rolls around, it's, oh, Phillip Rivers has gotten another year older. How long is he really going to play? You know, is he really deteriorating, you know, a la Peyton Manning and how his arm strength kind of fell out of nowhere towards the end of his career? And the Chargers haven't drafted a quarterback since the seventh round of 2013. It was a guy named Brad Sorensen, big physical guy. I mean, I think he was 6'5", 230, very similar to Phillip Rivers out of Southern Utah. I mean, a guy probably no one really heard about. He stuck around on a practice squad for maybe a year or two, three, and didn't really amount to anything. And since, they've kicked the tires on guys like Mike Borsovici out of Arizona State. Cardale Jones was like this project that Anthony Lynn got right away after spending some time with him in Buffalo. But that project's kind of out the door. And, you know, I think it was, what's his name? We had that long-haired backup for a while. I can't believe his name's blanking.
Charlie Whitehurst.
He's out of Oregon.
Clipboard Jesus.
White. Just kidding.
Was it Clipboard Jesus? Kellen Clemons. No, there it is. Kellen Clemons.
Oh, okay.
I actually get the two mixed up now that you're thinking of it. I get them two mixed up, but they've just had these very not, I wouldn't even consider passable backups that in the last couple of years, especially when you viewed preseason games and take it with a grain of salt. But when Phillip Rivers and the first team offense left the field, it was kind of the worst football I'd ever seen in my life. So for years now, having this, let's just call it better caliber backup to Phillip Rivers is a really nice safety net. And it was, I'm glad to see it. Telesco kind of addressing that. And I believe Tyrod Taylor really could be a guy, not so much in the same manner as New Orleans uses Taysom Hill as kind of this utility player, but To be able to add some variety to the Chargers offense where, you know, Tyrod can come in and do some goal line packages and work off his skill set to give defenses different looks, I think is super exciting. And it's kind of fun to see the coaching staff, you know, kind of keeping up with the times a little bit more than normally and bringing him in. And I just think in general, fans can rest easy were something, knock on wood, to ever happen to Philip Rivers at this age.
Well, get right to this pick. Well, actually, I do want to ask you a little bit because this board has gone so crazy. The Chargers have had a couple of different needs, and I've done a couple of different mock drafts for the Chargers, and I see that they can go some different ways. So I wanted to ask you specifically, because it is so late in this first round mock, you can even name a couple of guys that have been picked already. Who are some realistic targets you think the Chargers are looking at here with this 28th overall pick if they're going to stay pat here? Who are some, I guess, some positions and then maybe some specific names, if you have any, that they'd love to pick?
So earlier on, linebacker was thrown in as a position that the Chargers could really go for, but this was before Devin Bush and Devin White really solidified their talents and their athleticism to kind of raise them into the top 15 for sure category. Devin Bush, I saw mocked a couple times. This was when Mack Wilson was still kind of in the first round because no one really knew his athleticism too much. It was just based off the film, Alabama pedigree. So him as well. But with Bush, you know, solidifying himself upwards and Mack falling, linebacker's kind of been taken out. I think the biggest two right now are defensive tackle, some sort of interior defender, and offensive tackle. I think a lot of people still talk about offensive guard because of the way Dan Feeney kind of fell off his sophomore season, the Forrest Lamp debacle, which no one knows. I've tried to dig and press my sources, but no one knows anything about, you know, what's really going on with Forrest Lamp. But defensive tackle, offensive tackle are definitely the two that just have to happen.
Well, so who's it going to be? Let's get your official pick here at 28. Who's it going to be? Who do you have the Chargers taking in this guest mock draft?
So seeing the way this draft went and seeing some names, I'm surprising to see, you know, having gone earlier, it looks like I think the best option for the Chargers at 28 is Dalton Risner, offensive lineman out of Kansas State.
I love Risner. I love Risner.
That versatility. Yes, most definitely. He's a guy that's really hard not to love. I mean, I spoke a little bit with him at the Senior Bowl. I've seen a lot of people, you know, across Twitter and some of our coworkers talk to him, and everyone's just raving about the guy. And the one thing that stands out about Dalton Risner and why I think he's a pretty picture-perfect fit for the Chargers is versatility. And this is a guy who I think might be the guy who could probably play all five positions, you know, not named Jonah Williams potentially. I think he can play guard, he can play center. He's got experience absolutely everywhere. And one of my favorite things is his nastiness. And this is huge when I do my offensive line grades. It actually, you know, will take some people and raise them up quite a bit, maybe over some guys that you could argue are better, or going to be better players. But I just hold so much weight in the nasty prick demeanor and being able to finish and demoralize your opponent. That goes a long way, and especially winning some of the tough games. He's from Coach Snyder, who's part of the really old Iowa Hawkeye coaching tree with Hayden Fry, who's his staff, you know, back in the mid-80s. Everyone's a head coach somewhere in the NFL and Division I. There's just people everywhere. And if you know the Iowa pedigree about their offensive linemen and how they deal with their players in the trenches, I mean, it's absolutely amazing. It's fundamentally sound over and over and over. You can't find guys more well-versed in what they're doing. And that really excites me. And again, Risner was also at the Senior Bowl. And from a small sample size, I've realized that since Anthony Lynn came to the Chargers, they've taken a huge interest in Senior Bowl players. And again, small sample size. But before Anthony Lynn became the coach, January 2017, they picked, I believe, three players since 2013, which is Telesco's first year with the team, three players total in those four years where Telesco was the GM. Once Anthony Lynn came to town, they've drafted eight players these last 2 years from the Senior Bowl. And I think that's kind of a key thing to look at with these guys. And Risner fits that mold. He's versatile. He has the experience, the high character type of guy that guys like Phil Savage and Jim Nagy want at the Senior Bowl to represent college football. And I just think those variables are what Anthony Lynn wants in his team, high character guys, high versatility guys. And that's why Dalton Risner, couldn't be more perfect, honestly.
I like it. Ben, are you a Riser fan? You're a Riser fan, are you?
Listen, in the immortal words of the scout who sat behind us at Senior Bowl weigh-ins when Dalton Risner walked onto the stage, that guy's an effing douchebag, which is great news.
Jesus.
Just great news if you're an offensive lineman. It's great news. I mean, like, Risner was the most entertaining person I've talked to in this draft cycle, an absolute hoot and a holler.
Yeah.
My heart is breaking because Cody Ford is still on the board. But Risner, I mean, yeah, like, there's a lot to love with his game.
No, it's a good pick, man. I like Risner a lot. Michael, thank you so much, man. That was so much information on everything Chargers. We really appreciate you coming on and joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Ben, we got four more picks. Just
2 days left.
2 days left, and then it's going to be draft week. We're so pumped up about it, man. We can see the light at the end of the tunnel. The 2019 NFL draft is coming very quickly. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.